interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTW-RLM-519. We're not going to get any more information than what you get behind the woodshed. Not because we talk about the news. I don't say much about the news except to use it as the notice of what's coming up, what's going to be happening. Also, together with my experience in research and searching and study, where the future goes if we don't stop it. And so in this case, and if we start looking globally now, as we are, as the world is coming together, looks like it's splitting apart, but I've told you it's coming together in a certain way. I should be able to get to that, I hope, today to show you how that's working. We're doing international law here. And remember, you've been told that international rules-based order is in jeopardy because the United States imposed itself. And those that want to go under the old international law are saying no, and then they're both agreeing, whether they actively participate to bring it in or they do not abstain to stop it, they're bringing in the globalism. And this is the digital technocratic future. So let's get a move on. How they're going to keep us from understanding a lot of this stuff is they start attacking our lines of communication. And even though we have a problem generally with the journalism, there's journalists out there that are attempting to, for whatever their motive is, to give information. And they get attacked because the military knows about the lines of communication. Remember, we have an underlying right in the United States, at least, to alter and abolish. We have the right of press. We have the right of free speech. That means the integrated right, the implied right of acquiring the things that we would do that for. And for me, because we're moving into the ongoing use of national security, you're going to see this. I hope I can get through this whole bunch of tabs here. They're going to bring up national security at the end. I've already talked about all this, bringing it through an act. And they're going to use that under the color of actual national security. And I'm saying let's move back to the idea that if they use that under color, it's not true. We as a people in the United States have the right to alter and abolish that maladministration. That means we have the right to acquire information, even if it's top secret and leaked. And so we're going to have to come around and get our minds wrapped around how we're going to protect ourselves in the future. Is what I try to show you behind the woodshed. And I hope it all works out. I don't really know. There's a big organized thing going on. Quite a few little agents moving through, and they're inside your government. You may or may not know it. You'll complain of certain things. There's no justice. There's no actual law. There's no enforcement. There's no proper legislation. There's no proper execution. Everyone's getting executed. But from the executive, as I've been showing you, the Covey swindle worked out to show us perfectly. And then who was underneath all that? But an entity outside of the government itself, which is the power, the physical force that can cause the change, then understands it doesn't want to do it that way. Wants you to be convinced you've lost so it doesn't have to fight, which is your DOD. And it's literally globally. And then you have that good cop, bad cop. Now all the other world other than the West comes up and says, we're going to consolidate ourselves. We're going to coagulate at a different type of blood clot. And we're going to be the good cop now. We're going to do the diplomacy that we should have been doing. We're going to be doing all the things that we need for ourselves as opposed to the bad cop in the West. And all this thing's going to end up bringing together the future that was wanted against us. It ends up being an economic servitude. And it's not even that, because it's just a control of your life as someone pretends they have to express a liability that doesn't really exist. All of it doesn't really exist. That's the other thing. Even the civil government's a pretense, if you will. But we keep it together as long as it works for us. And I've been saying it's not working for us. It hasn't for a long time. Getting back to the DOD and the lines of communication and keeping us wondering, if nothing else, if not having no information. Well, be careful, you journalists. They're stepping it up. Put everybody on more edge. Journalist plugs in unknown USB drive mailed to him. It exploded in his face. So here we have these little USB drives that are big enough to put explosives in, and they are being sent to people. And absently, if the journalists kind of know about this, this is what they do. They forget the protocol of security and safety that they have to now put into play. It's no secret the USB flash drives, as small and unremarkable as they may look, can be turned into agents of chaos. Over the years, we've seen them used to infiltrate Iranian nuclear facility, infect critical control systems in the U.S. power plants morph into programmable, undetectable attack platforms and destroy attacked computers with a surprise 220-volt electrical surge. All these are just a few examples. They should be enough to preclude one from inserting a mysterious, unsolicited USB drive mailed to them into a computer. Unfortunately, one Ecuadorian journalist didn't get the memos. As reported by the agency France Presse, on Tuesday, five Ecuadorian journalists have received USB drives in the mail, and each of the sticks was meant to explode when activated. You can read the story. The point is they're now attacking your, at least in Ecuador, they're sending the message. They're sending the message. They talk about the USB. Don't forget, you can get this USB surrogate in your email. Not necessarily will it blow up in your face, but it can cause damage if they start to, if you're a target, they can then make your computer overheat and cause fire or whatever. The point being that these are, now your journalists are being attacked. For whatever reason they're now vulnerable everywhere. And I'm just pointing out, in this war that's going on, having honest journalists are going to be critical. Having places that people who are whistleblowers, we call them, who have this information to provide to people anywhere, is going to be critical, that they know they can go somewhere to drop it off. And the government, I hope I can get there. I really got to get through all these tabs, because at the very end, we're back to an act I talked about before. It's even more dangerous than I thought. I got more information for that. They're going to lock off all this stuff, just like I've said. They're going to lock off your access, and they're going to make it a crime to try and, as the Matrix is not a movie, you go through the sewer of this dark, deep web. You doing that could be a violation. So the punchline here already, so I don't lose it again. You have the right of free speech. You have the right of press. You have the right under the Constitution. Even though a lot of you are laughing that there's nothing there, I'm telling you to assert this anyway, because they're going to talk about an intention. Your intention has to be to fulfill those provisions that are already written down that are prohibited to the government. The right to do something is the right implied to do it, which means acquire. I learned this pretty clearly in the mining law. If you have the right to possess, you have the right to acquire. And so we move that into your intention is the fulfillment of the contract to do what? The Constitution, you want to call it that social contract. That Constitution is your right that's prohibited to the government to stop you from doing. It includes you having enough information to ferret out a maladministration under color of a national security to alter and abolish that maladministration. That's your intent. Any one of those elements right there. So they want to go after the people that would give us more information, and they want to make a point, and they want to send a message. Whoever this is all doing, I consider this the United States government itself and any other government. There's nothing solid about any other government as well. As I pointed out to you, even though I may talk to relative to Russia and what they look like they're moving through and how they're moving, I've told you and I've showed you, they're all moving toward this globalism and sovereignty, where the state itself is the control. Let me remind you now, in this attack of journalism and sending a message, I was reminded through a Twitter at the Mitt Press and a lot of people, 13 years ago today, a couple days ago, WikiLeaks released a leaked video titled Collateral Damage, which showed a U.S. Apache helicopter killing 12 people, including two Reuters journalists. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is currently facing a sentence of 175 years as he waits to be extradited from the U.S. from Belmarsh Prison in England. And so here's a guy, Julian Assange. The way they're treating that, it just shows you, it should have really given a lot of messages to people about how the U.S. government actually works in so-called justice, even in the U.K., and I've talked a little bit about that. I don't harp about this. We either get people to step up, the celebrities that are journalists themselves better get together and figure out there's remedies to start causing challenges to all this, to the people that are destroying this, that allow the continuation to get rid of journalists. He's been acknowledged, Julian Assange has been acknowledged to be a journalist. The United States is going after him as an espionage act. They do that under the color of a national security problem, which we found last week as I was ending the broadcast, is all a fraud. And no one seems to want to challenge that part. And I'm telling you, and I have been telling you, you better get challenging on it. They're going to use that as the club to beat everybody to death. So 13 years ago, more information came out about the misuse, the misappropriation of funds to do a military action that killed journalists, that killed people on a war that can't be shown to be proper. And we're still living with it. And that's, again, it started when? Back in 2003. which is just after 2001. And so another someone else posts the video. You can maybe revisit that if you want to remind yourself what WikiLeaks was able to do, because they were an inert, they were a neutral, if you will, place and safe place for people to give us the information. I'm suggesting, with the right to alter and abolish the government, the people have the right to get information that may show that the government's being maladministered. Doesn't matter to me at that point they want to call it top secret. That's the fraud. That's the color. And we need to get these words in our mind about how this is going to go forward. They're going to use this whole thing to club us to death in our rights, all everything that we know, everything that we know. And so I wanted to remind us that this journalist, the message givers, if you will, the people that who they have found their job and their skill is to bring and ferret out these pieces of information, are being attacked, and they have been, and it's not new news. I just want to remind us of the importance of it. And over time, listen to this, over time, 13 years ago, but Assange has been in jail in that embassy for over 7 years, and then like 4 years after that in Belmarsh under a solitary confinement. Now, I have to say quickly, there's an image going around of Julian Assange, pretty sad-looking image, but I understand it's an AI generation. So now we have deepfakes even causing that problem. So we got to be really careful on what information we do absorb and then use, and that's why I say understanding it, looking at all its potentials and then making a decision on it is very important. Learn to discern and then learn to apply it correctly. These other people want you to misapply everything. And that just calls you out by the time you get there. That's my main conversation with people who approach me for what they're doing and want to know, what do I think about what they're doing? Is to say, are you going by the black and white? Are you going by an objective basis that can't be made frivolous because you didn't have a foundation? We look at that. What's your path? What's your black and white path? They can't throw you off a path that's printed. They'll just ignore it, and then you get them for that, too. So the point is that we have to be continuously vigilant and active, and that active objection that we've had against going after people that would give us information so we can make these important decisions. Notwithstanding, they don't look like they're listened to at this point. We still have to do it as the people, because ultimately, silence is not an option. Otherwise, you become a conquered people. To me, over the last 20 years or so, there was a statement made that the United States people were conquered. As long as you can still stand up under international law, you're not conquered. I'm holding out hope. It looks like that it could still happen. We're not conquered yet. And so the question is out. But they know, these other side, these people that are taking us down, know exactly what to attack. You just go look at any other war and you'll look at the United States and see. As I mentioned today, once you finally see the United States government itself as a domestic terrorist group, and you'll look and look at this at their war against the people, you'll start looking at the battle. This thing that's going on in our, if this is a reality, to attack you is just the elements of war being worked on by someone who knows, who's expert at it, the DOD. Everything, every angle. And when I tuned my mind up to that and started to protect against that thing, that it started to be a lot more effective. I started to become much more effective, even if it was just to look at something and get on the uptake, understand it a lot better, not waste a lot of time, make the decision, can I do something or can I not? And if there's something I cannot, can there's someone that I know that might? A lot of times that's what I'm talking about behind the woodshed here. There's all these things that could be done. Which one of you can step up and take care of it? A turning tide. So all this time, this objection keeps wearing on people. So this is one of our strengths in this story here. Turning tide, U.S. Congress and Julian Assange. It's the acknowledgement in the people in Congress. And this over this time, people change. So you keep wearing on them. This is even down to your local county. You keep talking objectively. You don't talk to your subjective opinions. You give them the problem. You give them the law already says is the answer. Typically, you'll find that. And then you keep pressing that they need to start doing things correctly. Eventually you start wearing them down and the words start coming out of the seats of decision, the legislators. They're people with a conscience. If it's not conscience, you're not, it may not be your way of going, but they think about it, that they start coming back and they start to say, wait a minute, there is a big problem. And one of the things is hypocrisy. But of all people, one shrill voice talking and touching on delirium was Connecticut Senator Gerald Lieberman, former Senator Homeland Security, Senate Homeland Security Chairman, in response to Cablegate release, so it has more than a touch unhinged. attacking WikiLeaks for diplomatic cables is nothing less than an attack on national security. So that was what the entry was. This is what's coming out of the Homeland Security, which is the being adjusted as new people come in. They feel that this is an attack on national security. And so they went to the Espionage Act to try and do that. In fact, I would say that if anybody, as you go through this, you will have to adopt that your intention is to do the constitutionally granted thing or the constitutionally observed prohibitions, not any of these things they're going to claim. And you have to assert that these things they're going to claim, like espionage, is actually the colorable claim and fraud in order to take from you, unlawfully take from you, your right to do the things that the Constitution provides. This statement that comes out from the government has been allowed, but because of the objection coming through, there's more people that are starting to say there's some real problems. The indictments are not really well placed. They're actually going after protected matters. They're going after protectable and protected people. And I don't mean that we're special in that the government was never to touch these people. This communication lines were to be literally inviolate so that we would be an informed populace. And if we're not, then that's how we get to ignorance. And ignorance is no excuse, remember? And so they prey on all that. They tell us they're going to prey on it. They use the right to alter and abolish as a license to come after us until we stop them. They do all the law. They break the law until we stop them. And so we have a discussion now that there is a tide turning in people inside now, finally, to maybe look at this a lot better. I hope they do. To me, it's if you want to say there's due process, he's supposed to be innocent. He's supposed to be innocent, presumed innocent. And what they're doing, they're giving him a pre-trial prison sentence. And that means they can do that to you. And they did that after 9/11, right? So they did that. You were presumed to be guilty sufficient to be a domestic terrorist to put you in indefinite detention. You're watching it in this guy. And no one, I don't see anybody just saying, hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. It's a colorable claim that it's a fraud. Now, what proof it's going to take, I don't know, but at least you put it out there. Why don't people put this stuff out there? Why don't they challenge the jurisdictions correctly? Why don't people go after the people that claim to have an authority inside these instrumentalities of the government and say and find out how they may not be? Now, as I say that, just a quick aside, just talking to someone here a couple of days ago. There's a situation coming down in the United States quite across a number of states. We just got on a situation challenging the people that are doing the prosecutions, and it's been successful again. Then the discussion is that a win? No, but it's a first stepping stone. The war is not over here. The people that prosecute you, and it looks like in every state, are completely invalid. We know that. The point was someone did more study and found out how to make it so. Not just like what I was studying, go after their oath, or their bond, this, that, and the other. They would turn that around on you. And they would say, it's your job to make the proof. Well, there's an authority that says you don't have to do that. And when you find it, now you have the better answer. The point is we have to be more informed and get more read about how we're going to protect ourselves. Otherwise, we are the conquered people. They're treating us as conquered people now, but I truly don't know that that's the case. Again, even with all your guns, forget all your guns. It's not coming to that first. So, but we move on. These indictments, why aren't they challenging? Why don't we challenge these things in the first point? That was what Russia did. But what Russia did in this case with Assange, they did an interesting suggestion. Russia MP suggests swapping WSJ reporter for Assange. If Moscow decides on a prisoner swap involving Evan Gershkovich, it could ask for Julian Assange release from a British dungeon, Russian State Duma deputy Sergei Ubakov said on Friday. Interesting idea here. Well, think about how these people, the nations and their diplomats and then their officials are all thinking about how this all works. Now Russia's looking in no different than maybe Snowjob Snowden's now a citizen there to say, hey, this guy's being mistreated. And I would have to agree with that, even if I wouldn't agree why maybe Russia's doing it. Julian Assange is being mistreated. He's not been presumed innocent. They did the color of law national security problem that touched on espionage, which all is a fraud, and no one's calling it out. No one's calling out the officials, all the attorneys or anything for theirs. I've made criticisms. I don't touch it too much. The point is that there's a knowledge. There's now an awareness coming to start. They're chess pieces. That's all we seem to be. And we use these issues as a nation in order to call out something. I thought this was pretty unique. My mind says whatever gets him out of prison at this point. Because he's supposed to be presumed innocent. But he's in face of corruption that I know I've studied for 30 years or more. Again, we're living, it doesn't matter what government you live in, you're in an occupied people. Partly the riots in the streets explain that as well. You're not living in peace, you're not living under the law, you're living under a torture, an oppression. And you may be defenseless to that. That's an almost creeping up to a conquered people. But guess what? Every state in the United States, their attorney generals are supposed to be protecting against that. Do they? Maybe you're not living in that nation you thought you lived in. That's the people now, the nation. But Russia says, oh, we'll swap this WSJ reporter for the one that's being, we feel is being violated. What a slap to the face, even regardless of what Russia's intention is. What a slap in the face to lawful due process. What a slap to the so-called judiciary globally. Another indictment challenge. And this is where you saw Russia step right up and say, and challenge the jurisdiction. These things in the news will tell us something, and they say it real consistent, if you'll just notice what they're doing. And I told you, watch what Russia does. It's not just Russia, but because of the way the dynamic is, it's easy to look at Russia now. No different than I could look at Kobe Swindle coming, and I ran to that. I didn't go anywhere, but I ran over to the Communicable Disease Code when we saw it become real in January for me, and I moved on to tell you as we moved into March, and predicted that a week or so ahead of that, say this is where you're going to have to position yourself. I didn't do it because I know so much. I had to go learn by going to the Communicable Disease Code. Yeah, it's all black and white sitting right there for answering it, but challenging the authority. That's all we're doing, challenging their authority. We call it challenge jurisdiction. Funny word. The right to hear and determine. Well, in that case, you have to, in the Communicable Disease Code, the local official has the duty to determine first before they get the right. Interesting, huh? Because that's under police power. But back to this, challenging indictments. I hope you know where I'm going on this, just then we'll move on. Bombshell report debunks ICC warrant for Putin. Or Putin, and mainstream media sidesteps it. Fascinating disclosure here. Absolutely fascinating. The radio silence from the legacy media as a new expose completely undermines, quote, the allegation by the ICC that Russia is running a network of camps that are holding children as hostages and committing a war crime by illegally deporting Ukrainian children, which they attributed to Putin. That's the breaking news of a story that came from, again, the gray zone. And I'm having to appreciate the gray zone. Maybe they're more like very small WikiLeaks. I don't know. But they give us more knowledge and look around. And they broke a story based on a report by some other reporters. And so we're now having more witnesses. The one reporter of which went to the place from gray zone in support of gray zone's work. He went there. I got some links for that. And they found that what was being said was untrue. They identified the one who was doing the work for the report was actually a United States State Department funded entity, individual. And when you look at what he did and what they explain in the report, he worked essentially on internet data. Never set a foot in the country that he was talking about. Never went to the places he was talking about. Got the information from the internet. That should terrify you because that's what this big data is about. They look from afar and then they make an accusation. He was paid by the United States State Department. That report went to the ICC from which they determined that Putin needed to be indicted as a war criminal. The Russian government said, no, the ICC has no jurisdiction. Now we find the charging instrument is failed. Is this all I talk about, folks, behind the woodshed on how you look at this and you figure it out for yourself when they come after you? It's right here what we need to do as a population, I notice, doesn't understand this kind of stuff. The International Court issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin, accusing him of unlawful deportation of Ukrainian children to a network of inside Russia. The warrant was based on a report by the Yale HRL Center, which is funded by the United States Department. Now understand, the United States Department won't recognize ICC either. But what are they doing work, spending money to go work a report to go hand to the ICC to go get an adversary? Shows you that the ICC is a political creature. It's attached to the UN. The UN's a political creature. Can we end this now? Can we end this nonsense? But you know, Russia wants to say, oh, the UN's good enough that we're going to continue because it means peace and all. Have you seen peace in the world since that happened? No. So this is even Russia's on the off side of this. However, Russia did challenge the jurisdiction, and now we find even the charging instrument may have a fatality. Now, I'm just pointing this out on this side, not going through this story. It's can I say shocking? It's shocking to find out the underbelly of this thing, how corrupt it actually is. Everywhere we look anymore, we see this story. Who did the report? What went on? In another Twitter thread, you can just pick them up and look at them. I don't know why you wouldn't be interested in just watching how this all works. When I saw this, this was an important story, and I want to know more. But not many are going to respond. That didn't matter. I asked through this post that was on the Twitter, and I'm asking the guy who wrote the report, trying to make better sense of this, Natty Ray 11, what about this expose at the Gray Zone, Lofredo, Jeremy, and Max Blumenthal isn't correct in substance? If you haven't seen this, John Pilger, it seems an important indictment for many reasons on many levels. So I send that out. I got one like on it. I wasn't messing around here, folks. I want to know about this guy. He's supposed to be taking money from the United States government for doing these reports, and it ends up being fraudulent. And the State Department's not being challenged on that misappropriation of public funds through the State Department. It's not identifying to the people that it's a part of its attack on Putin through using the ICC as an instrument, and the ICC was okay with that. No independent checks anywhere. The problem for us is you notice that big data can be used to make an indictment that some jurisdiction believes and now blames some other guy in another jurisdiction that they don't have jurisdiction over as some criminal. Is what I've been telling you happens when the government gets into the internet and does all this big data acquisition on you. They make stuff up. I've heard so many people say, well, I don't do anything wrong. You don't know that you don't do anything wrong. They'll make it up. Here's the evidence. And here's also how they have to challenge it. You also hear when there's no actual court, you're standing facing the accuser without a remedy. And so where is the justice there is acknowledgement that there is no international law. There's whatever you can get away with. It's the natural order of things now. But Russia challenged the indictment. Now I'm getting over to what I've said before in prior broadcasts about what's happened in this country that became the historic thing. The indictment. You all know what I'm talking about? The Trump indictment. What I called Trump theater going into this thing. And I want to point out some things here, as I've been doing over and over and over, as I did when the elections ended and Trump was the only man in the world that had standing to challenge, and they didn't. No, they went off some circus. Indicated to me exactly what the outcome was going to be all this time since. Is this theater circus? It seems to me a wealthy man as Trump, who can afford all the attorneys I see working here and there and wherever, you'd think they'd do the most basic challenge if it was true what Trump was saying about how bad Bragg is, how bad the indictment is, how this and that and the other. You'd think he would do the most basic challenge. And you watched as he made none. He didn't even do what the Russians did against the ICC, right in our face. He didn't, and Russia hasn't yet stepped up to say, wow, you can't, you made that judgment even that you don't have jurisdiction. You used the information of fraudulent information to bring the ICC indictment. So we have two things. We have the entity that would oversee, and we have the charging instrument that invokes that jurisdiction and then invokes it over the party. That's persona. You're watching a major failure in due process right here that the United States foments. Do you think they're going to give it to you at home? And they don't. So this is the point, that you have to do your best to defend yourself. Why I say you don't allow the jurisdiction until they've proven themselves. And there's so many things that need to be done. The very first thing is they have to have a charging instrument that's lawful. Did you hear Trump challenge the lawfulness of the charging instrument, notwithstanding all his vociferation about how bad it was, how wrong everything was. And I'm just going to answer you, if he didn't know, he didn't. And we know that. We know that. How fast did we know that? I have the link to the PDF file to the 34 charges. Essentially, they all repeat over pretty much over and over. I didn't get too deep in this, folks. The grand jury of the County of New York, by this indictment, accuses the defendant of the crime of falsifying business records in the first degree in violation of Penal Law Section 175.10, committed as follows. And they go through count after count, essentially with this statement. The statement also within which says that with intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime, and aid and conceal the commission thereof, made and caused a false entry in a business record of an enterprise. So that's what it says inside there, and I'm addressing that caused, because I've heard, and I'm not here to argue, I've heard professors say there's no charge, there's no cause given for this charge for the indictment. That is a challenge that says it violates the Sixth Amendment. I'm only bringing that up not to argue the point, because it says caused, and whether or not that really is a cause, to bring it up relative to the state statute, that the state statute now that he is subject to, apparently, it says caused. If it's not, why didn't Trump challenge that? How do we know that he didn't, and likely he now can't? We have legal expert sounds the alarm, reveals how Bragg violated Trump's constitutional rights. Again, to me, this is all just theater. This might be that there was a violation under the Sixth Amendment. But being silent as to it waives that argument. Did you hear Trump do any of this? And I'm leading somewhere with this procedurally. And it's simple as understanding traffic tickets to understand this criminal charge. Remember, traffic tickets aren't really criminal, but they're brought and they're through the criminal statutes for due process. So think about that one. So we just use the criminal process and we see what we can do. Well, traffic tickets have this little thing called a set-aside. It's something I mention periodically called a pre-plea remedy and avoidance. And you try to find that out on the internet anymore. Pre-plea remedy and avoidance. Pre-plea remedy and avoidance. You hear me, folks? Pre-plea. It is the things that you get to challenge before you get involved in a court, before you've agreed that they have jurisdiction, before you need to make a plea. And you explain the things, even two, that Russia's already done against the indictment from the ICC. Then it's a fraudulent document. And then you delineate how. And then you also say, but you don't have jurisdiction first because you don't have a proper document. Did you hear Trump do any of this pre-plea remedy? You state that the court does not have jurisdiction. I said set aside. You catch that? Not dismissal. This became the recent court case. I was talking with someone who just put this through. They did this. They made a dismissal. And I said, but you have a set aside. The court cannot take jurisdiction on a fraudulent document. A fraudulent indictment. A fraudulent anything. And so it's not a dismissal. They don't have power to dismiss. They never had the case to begin with. That's what Russia's saying. Did you hear Trump say that? No. No, you hear him come out after and complain. And this is what I want you to start observing. Trump circus. He used to tell me that all the high-powered lawyers he's got doesn't understand how to challenge jurisdiction. And when they didn't, maybe what that means? What did it mean when he didn't challenge it? I can tell you in law, it waived all that and he agreed. All his statements afterwards are superfluous, in the minimum. Legal expert sounds the alarm on a Sixth Amendment violation. Did you hear anybody prior to plea? Did you hear it come out of the news? Prior to plea, he challenged the indictment for that failure. No, he didn't have it. He has the right to, and I know that just through traffic law. You have the right in a pre-plea remedy and avoidance to do so. And this is not even traffic law. Pre-plea remedy and avoidance is a due process right that existed, I think, prior to traffic tickets. Where and how I found it years ago, I can't even remember. And you know, it's real hard to find this. I only found a few documents on the internet that even spoke to this. But it was there. And what they are is that set-aside, if you have them in your state, a set-aside is a pre-plea remedy and avoidance. And what the court says is, oh, you're right, we have a defect. Some defect in a number of things available to be looking at that the court is required by duty to look at, actually, but doesn't. And, oh, yeah, you're correct. It's not before me. I will set it aside. It's gone. And there it goes. There's a defect somewhere. whether there's jurisdiction of the court, whether it was invoked improperly, the fraudulent indictment, something on the indictment doesn't work. All this is your pre-plea. Did you hear him do any? Did you hear all these highfalutin attorneys do anything for all the complaints that he said was such a political setup? I didn't hear any. I didn't see any in the news. Trump theater. Now, I'm going to be embarrassed if he didn't understand some of this basic. This is basic stuff, folks. I know maybe most people don't understand it, but this is truly basic stuff on a informed populace. What we're imposed upon to know, all this nonsense we're supposed to know about so-called law, that's all on us. And most people don't take even the most basic steps to understand some of it. Not even if they get a traffic ticket. So I'm, okay, leaning a little bit on us a bit. But let me get back to Trump. I was, just like his election, I was a bit excited at his potential. And so disappointed on how his execution and how quickly he abandoned his own rights. He did it. A lot of professors said, oh, that's a Sixth Amendment violation. I didn't even hear that. Didn't even hear that, let alone all this other stuff that he could have said that I've been mentioning quickly here. He comes out and said there was nothing done illegally as if, on his part, as if that's a defense against an indictment. Is that a defense against an indictment? That he, oh, I plead my innocence. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Before we get to the point where he's coming out to a party and says that there was nothing done illegally as trying to answer to an indictment that he just said, I'm not guilty. He said, I'm not guilty. To what? To the charges. He never presented a pre-plea remedy in abhorrence, so he wouldn't have to plea into the jurisdiction and arrange the jurisdiction was proper to hear and determine the cause. Even so, does it saying that he did nothing illegal address the legal requirements? No, not at all. And he went through and made a whole lot more statements. He flew in and flew out. I told you it was going to be a fly-in, you know, it was just going to be a real summary process. In fact, when you read, I told you this, the security people that are around him would dictate it. Sure enough, you look in the news, that's exactly what happened. And I'm telling you this, what, days and days before this all came down, as they drug it out. He says the hearing was shocking to many in that they had no surprises and therefore, no case. It's just his assertion in a rally. Does it answer the legal requirements for an indictment that has the presumption of correctness? No, not at all. Did he? No, because he pled guilty. He agreed with that jurisdiction, notwithstanding he's saying the judge is corrupt or whoever, the daughter is corrupt or whatever. Didn't try to recuse the judge, nothing. I want you to understand this because this is all the power you have in your cases. Will it go anywhere? I don't know. It depends on how good you do it. Depends on what the court, how embarrassed I think the court gets on how what you're exposing. In the recent case I just talked to somebody on, it was so bad, the court realized the hot potato was in the judge's hand, and the judge is likely doing the same fraud. And so they dismissed the case. And I said, hey, that's not a dismissal. You want to challenge that? You want a clarification and say, that was really a set-aside, wasn't it? Because it's a big difference between the two. Right? Did Trump do any of that? No. And I predicted Trump theater. I don't want to predict Trump theater. I'm excited to want to see due process work and law work, and I see nobody doing it, not even a very wealthy man with a lot of, I mean, who, he wasn't mugshotted because he's got a face that you can't miss now. They claim that he doesn't even have to have a mugshot. They know him. They got his picture. They've already got his background. This guy doesn't even have to go through much of the process. As I told you what happened, that they were in handcuffs. That's like everybody should be doing that. So I told you the two-tier system. But he goes on to say on this rally that he did nothing illegal. Again, that doesn't answer anything. He said Trump said while commenting on his arraignment on Truth Social. Is that where you should be doing your legal defenses or your law defenses? Actually, is what that is. Law defenses when you do pre-plea. Trump faces criminal charges for an alleged role in a 36, they had an error here, 34 it ends up being counts, criminal charges. It's document fraud. And so. And I guess they're going to tie it to the election. We'll see. But Trump didn't go after all that he told y'all ahead of time. He didn't go after it as a pre-plea remedy and avoidance to challenge the authority of the prosecutor, the authority of the jury, the authority of the judge needing to be recused, the authority of the validity of the indictment, the validity in the Constitution. He did nothing. Nothing. And what he did, and I was just waiting to see, did he plea? And he did. He's waived, in law, he's waived all his pre-plea remedies except, I think, two. And there's those two is that the court never had jurisdiction at all on non-waivable matters. And there's only, I think, one or two of those. So there's a holdout idea that he might do it, but then he didn't do any. He didn't make a record of his objection. Is it a good record to make if you're trying to say I'm going to support protecting the United States and they're after me, after you through me? Is not a good representative for you. Remember, it's on you, every one of us, to defend ourselves. And this guy, I don't think, did. He certainly didn't make the record of his objections. Even if they denied all him to him, he would have every one of those to declare invalid, pre-plea remedy and avoidance measure that was denied that was valid. He has a right on every one of those in a different context before the court on appeal to challenge for lack of jurisdiction. Once you plea, it's a whole different. You should do the same objections for the record, but they have a different analysis that's done after plea. Because you don't look at the waived issues that you don't have. And they're not looked through that purview either. And so, some of you that do the research, you'll know what I'm talking about. There are those that you don't even know what I'm talking about, may be confused. But there is a way to do this analysis. And there is a way at least to make a knowledge to people that you knew that you were protected, and then you proved the system wasn't going to give it to you. Now you might have a say, but that then goes through the appeal process, doesn't it? And in this case, if he does pre-plea remedies and avoidance, in this case, trying to set aside, just move that citation aside, the indictment aside, if he could, those issues are immediately appealable. He could drag this thing out for like near ever. But what do they do? Once he pleads, they then set a date. You think you get a speedy trial within 180 days or something? No, it's going to go out to December 4th before he has to come back. Did he even object about the speedy trial? No, but that's halfway. Speedy trial, speedy to the election, isn't it? Halfway to it. And then they say they're what? They're going to have a trial right after that. Well, it depends on what he does legally with his paperwork and his motions, whether or not that happens. And so they push him up until the election time, or not. And there's a plan about when they want to get him, if they want to get him, how they're going to get him, and whether or not he's going to be, what he's going to look like when he gets to election, which is election tampering on his face. This very thing that they think they're talking about here against him. All continued and planned out and timed because he's not interfering by using his remedies. He's waiving them. He made all these comments at a rally. They're irrelevant. He pled in. He didn't make a record against and challenge all the things he told you was wrong. None of it. Disappointing. His son is said, Donald Trump Jr., is said to come out, and I can't really verify this, but it makes a point for me to say, America is no different from any other tyrannical regimes around the world. That's attributed to him. I can't find follow-up proof. But on that point, if you look at this and say, because I see lots of people kind of rallying around this sentiment, we live in a banana republic, which I agree, but not because of this reason. Is it that we live in a banana republic? What banana republic do you know would make a special dispensation to not take a mugshot, not put you in shackles, not provide bail, and we have an answer about that too in New York, which is kind of interesting. He's benefiting from a Democratic view, party view of what should happen. But it's a fraud too because of the way it works. But no bail, and obviously no travel restrictions. How many of people have been involved with a criminal complaint and you go to bail, and if you were lucky earlier, years and years ago, to get your OR, just to be able to be released, they said you can't leave the state if it was a serious enough crime. Allegation. No presumption of innocence again. How is no mugshot, no shackles, no bail, no travel restrictions evidence of a tyrannical regime like a third world country, banana republic? How is that? Is it reflected by what happened? And so this is theater. It's not real. It's to foment agitation. No, I haven't seen anybody stop, focus in, and say, wait a minute, why didn't you do any of this stuff? Quit talking. No, let's get back to why your attorneys didn't do what it is. You need to be your own example as well. You need to expose a lot of this stuff for other people as well. I guess I said need. I guess you don't have to do anything. But you're going to have it go down when I'm the only one speaking and there's only a handful. I have a listener. That's not going very far to be the counter. It's no different than for me if I'm doing some journalistic work, some expose of my own about how the system works. If I only have a listener, it's no different than me being in solitary confinement. Any one of us. I'm saying me because I'm the one speaking right now here. And so we have a censorship going on as well with relative to just trying to show objective basis to be able to balance at what we're watching, to be able to learn to discern exactly what should have happened. And when it didn't, what did that mean? We get to work that out. And we all really do have to work it out. But I'll tell you, once you get a little bit of foundation, the analysis goes pretty quick. You place it where it belongs, and then you start watching, where's that going? What are they doing here? What's this? Or you don't invest in the circus anymore. Now we have a problem because that means that guy's part of it, as some of us might say. We might know that. And the problem then is that this is a big facade, and where do we, the people, go with that? We have an explanation. Why, for one of them, the banana republic that we are, that Donald Trump Jr. is said to have commented to, but why Trump probably didn't have to post bail is answered in a link here. They claim in that state, and I think this is properly so, but it's for the wrong reason, as I said. Bail reform, they say. Laws took effect 3 years ago, eliminated bail for most misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies. And that was really just a provision of own recognizance. If you were innocent, you didn't have any priors, if you will, weren't a threat, you didn't have a flight risk for whatever it was, you could actually walk out on your own word. Your word was your bond. What happened to that is showing you the courts have become banks, and it became so abhorrent that poor people, if you will, were being terribly oppressed by it. And so the Democratic Party pressed, we need to have bail reform. And the conservatives went nuts about that. And so I'm watching the Uniparty show up again. The conservative adherents. There's a problem. It has nothing to do with eliminating the bail. It has to do with not the courts not justifying the ability to hold someone who's presumed innocent. That doesn't have a real threat. Notwithstanding what they've done, unless it's on, you get this a lot of a shooters and stuff. You don't have that kind of level of evidence. You're presumed innocent. And unless there's some aggravating evidence against you, then we're supposed to walk. We're not supposed to be a monetary bail. That bail is only to keep you to show up. That's all these bails are for. Will you show up and sit in the prosecution that you never avoided by challenging the indictment? So we have they have bail reform. Trump, Democratic imposed bail reform is what Trump just benefited by. Nobody will hear anything about this. And I think, fine, where's he going to go? What's anybody? But look at everybody's two-tier system that did have to pay bonds in places that they don't have it. But it's not for the right reason. Our word is our bond. We don't need money. If there's no evidence to say our word is not our bond, we can say we're going to show up, and until next time that we don't. And that's why they make a big deal, if you notice, they make a big deal about failure to appear. It's like a mental challenge in a way, but not for the same reason. It's one of those things they know. They want to take your guns, they're going to charge you with a felony. Why? Because felons can't have guns. Doesn't say that in the Second Amendment, but that's what they do. The occupier slowly and incrementally takes away all the rights of people. They don't do it and legislators do it, then they do it by your purported actions in a place now we find they can make it up. They make it up and you become someone who's now sitting on the wrong side of the law just because they look at a distance and say that's good enough. They don't follow the actual objective basis of what it takes. And if we thought Trump was in, it was all promoted that there's a historic thing, this, that, the other. A president has faced arrest before Trump. For carriage speeding 150 years ago. Interesting little story. I guess I could spend some time going through it, but we have so much to talk about. I'll go a little bit here. The former President Trump, Donald Trump, was indicted Thursday on charges related to hush money payments to cover up affairs. While the nature of Trump's indictment is unprecedented, he's actually the second to face arrest. The story, a little bit of the story, the first was President Ulysses S. Grant just after the Civil War. Interesting relation. If you start looking back, I thought this was a nice and interesting reflection for us if we wanted to go back and look, just look at that time period. Very interesting what they're saying here. William West, a former enslaved person, joined the Metropolitan Police in the nation's capital after fighting the Civil War, according to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. In 1872, West was on the lookout for speeding horse-drawn carriages near Washington's 13th and M Street when he jumped in front of a carriage racing toward him. West quickly realized he'd pulled over the President Grant and issued a warning, but the next day, West caught the President speeding again and brought him in. "I'm sorry, Mr. President, to have to do it, for you are the chief of the nation, and I am nothing but a policeman. But duty is duty, sir, and I will have to place you under arrest." West said that in 1872. That made West the first and only law enforcement officer to arrest a sitting president. I'll let you read the rest of the story. Very interesting what they talk about, routine traffic violations and this officer doing his duty. So duty was important in 1872, and the president recognized it. Why I keep telling you today, even after the Civil War, when we made the more perfect union underneath those civil rights you have of the exactions or wrongful extortions of every kind, duty was important. Duty of the official. Why I point to it today. And so this is a neat story. Kind of neat to watch this. But Trump wasn't the first. And you notice they called it criminal back then for traffic. Now it's now administrative. And it is, but it's preceded through criminal procedure statutes. If you're lucky enough to have a state that defines that for you to see it, it's pretty interesting. In those criminal procedure statutes, there's a much higher standard of proof that the state has to bring, too. And that's part of that pre-plea remedy and avoidance you get to use, if you know that. Otherwise, most people just shrug their shoulders and think what they're looking at, that piece of paper, is sufficient to get them in and have to be plundered by the bank, the court bank, of whatever monies there are and whatever penalties on top of that. And sometimes you have to go in, and because you gave the jurisdiction, they can, in some instances, put you in the cage. Interesting story about a president and how you, what happens under law. Interesting story before, what could have happened under law that the president, the ex-president, wasn't actually engaging. And another way you can take out presidents is kind of what we started to lead. You move along, you start seeing how this starts to work. Tucker Carlson, the deep state, removed Nixon, the most popular president ever, to cover up CIA's murder of JFK. Very interesting, again, story here to more round out what was going on, more fill in the blanks, notwithstanding the documents that we're not getting. I don't really want to get too deep in this. I just want to point out that the internal war against our own people has been going on for a long time. I didn't actually, when I was younger, didn't actually understand that Nixon was that popular. So this was kind of interesting. They show you, though, about Agnew getting put in and how that works. They show you a little bit of what the machinations, what they call the deep state today, it has been about. They make acknowledgments that are what we all, anybody looking in, thought would go on. How you take a president out, you don't have to kill them. And then you also see maybe they don't speak for a reason. That gets me back to why didn't Trump go ahead and do his pre-plea remedy of an avoidance and expose to you what you could do, or expose that they didn't have jurisdiction? What's the circus going on? Or maybe he couldn't. It wasn't the Sixth Amendment, the right. Why don't we get that determined? Why don't the people have the benefit of looking in on how that would work and do the analysis for each one of us? It's an ongoing perception management condition to keep you ignorant. And you can stay that way if you want, or you can become someone that starts to see this thing. And as I say, you start learning about this, you start to neutralize a lot of things, either whether it's the perception management or it's what the government wants to do with you. And for each one of us, the Covey swindle was the perfect, like I said, it's the perfect thing to go ahead and do that. We could have all learned how to go ahead and give distance between us and the government until the duty was fulfilled. Remember, I kept talking about that. We saw that in little 1872 about a freed person, arresting the president. Pretty neat story right there, huh? Yeah, a lot of little perception management going on as well. But that's what happened. At least we're told, right, by the history. Not her story. I don't know about all that gender stuff anyway, but this story about how you take out a president by the CIA to cover up another taking out of a president, the assassination of JFK. A little bit corroborated in the story here with someone who was in office around that time. For decades, I have explained that Watergate was a CIA scheme to remove President Nixon from the office. And so we have, for those of us that were here, you know, we were part of the seeing that perception management go on. Some of the information may or may not be known up front of our memories, or we may have researched and found. There's someone who was there a while back who is telling us that he's been trying to tell us what's going on, Paul Gregg Craig Roberts. Carlson is correct that Nixon was an enemy of the deep state, but the plot against Nixon originated prior to Nixon's meeting with the CIA director Richard Helms. Nixon was removed because he was normalizing U.S. relations with the Soviet Union and China. Do we have that problem today, folks? Do these things just linger because we allow this corruption inside the system? Whether or not we understood it or know it, it's still taken as a license that they're not being stopped. This was seen, he writes on here, as a taking away the needed enemies for the military security complex budget and power. This was also the main reason for the CIA murder President Kennedy. Kennedy having to come face to face with the nuclear war, the Cuban Missile Crisis, was working with Khrushchev to normalize U.S.-Soviet relations. President Trump's intention to normalize U.S. relations with Russia was the reason Trump was removed from office. And you see how vicious they're coming after it, but I'm pointing out to you that he's not doing anything in actual defense. Shame on the attorneys that don't know that, even to make the record or to announce why they wouldn't, so that we know that they knew to do it, but they didn't, because it isn't the Sixth Amendment violation. It is okay. Bragg was fine. The jury was fine, legally, in the law, until something else happened. Eh? So, we don't hear none of that, though. And all the money that Trump's spending on those attorneys, what a plunder. And maybe Trump's ignorant, a worse situation. But he evidences examples our population were an ignorant people. And I don't have a problem with all that. I want to fix it I want to be honest about it and fix all that. In other words, he's not your savior. They're not coming at you through him. They're already at you. And they use him to keep the fog machine running. President Trump's intention to normalize U.S. relations with Russia. Are we that problem today, folks, that they were dealing with back in Khrushchev's time with Kennedy and the Cuban Missile and nuclear as well? Tell me it ain't so. But here we are. Never goes away, these people. And they have the license until we alter and abolish that maladministration. Then we get this interesting little story. Kennedy and his brother may not be such a cool team. We see all the cover of perception management going after organized crime. But if you look inside this story about what was going on, again, they were making enemies, but they were also making friends with that same organized crime. Kennedy's secret Sicilian operation. This is his brother. The CIA didn't tell the Warren Commission this story. Another things about not knowing. We have to wait years and years and years that possibly journalists, maybe like Seymour Hersh, might expose. And lots of things were being exposed. But again, as we now know, it's quashed or killed, right? And so he says this story is, I and others have written on the breach that grew between Jack and Bobby Kennedy and the covert operatives of the Central Intelligence Agency over the Kennedys' repeated demands that the agency find a way to assassinate Fidel Castro. Same agency, right? This is a hub of activity for the United States government, now driven by an executive, actually, in Bobby Kennedy. Cuba's communist leader was in brother's sights before and after he survived a failed Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. More deception. On and on. This is an interesting story. Part of my memory doesn't really remember this. Plus, I was maybe too young, if I was even young, to be having interest at all. The information, at least by, you know, you go through school and stuff, is all kind of convoluted as well, where I got some of this understanding, which was probably all fabricated. Going back and reading through this and trying to put a context in it, very interesting on the dynamic that's inside. It's not just that, oh, we got the president, the greatest president, you know, most popular that's doing something right. You have presidents that look popular that may have been doing some other things. And these actions, even though they went after organized crime, in this case going after the Sicilian operation was the mafia, you realize when you go through the story that mafia people were actually engaged with President Kennedy, and they had favor of the same woman, which is another interesting story. And that woman, we have to wonder, because there are some question about what her story was. What again, still perception management. The Kennedy secrets, the Sicilian operation is another link I have, and consistent with the other, just to explain again how this thing goes. But we have the Kennedys inside, where the CIA goes after Kennedy, even though we focus on Khrushchev, and then we find out about Nixon, and then they try to go after him because of the military-industrial complex, essentially, that we were told about in before, to avoid an Eisenhower, is playing through all this the whole entire time. And so we're watching this, the government foment activities around the world, or take out leaders that, if you thought your government was a democracy, we'll call it, you know, popular, you're deluded. Same problems then are the same problems now. The same people moving it forward, the same problem people moving it forward, because we haven't altered and abolished it. And I don't know of a way your Second Amendment stops this thing right here. I don't know if you noticed how much coverage was around the ex-president, former president, they call it, Trump. That's the government right there. Everybody was positioned to protect that leader. You know, he still has connections, even though he's not running. They've denounced that he has authority, but I'm sure I've heard in prior administrations, every president gets briefed to some extent. There's a background of information from people who have been in the office, and that's a proper thing to do in any government, even though they're not saying that they're using his information. No, he's a special guy still. Yet he didn't do the most basic law work. I'm kind of stunned a bit. I'm always disappointed. These guys just disappoint me. I want someone to step up and either show me I'm wrong or show me I'm right. We have the right to see that we're right if we would just do it. But no one seems to do it, that in my observations. So that's where I kind of rest everything till we can become a populace that understands that and what to do. And how to at least become a defender of ourselves in the proper black and white. I don't see how we go around and do much of anything else. We're going to be susceptible to these inside jobs as they've been going on forever. It's just being told to us more obviously. And part of that technique is to get you to stop. You just clamber onto the term and not do anything substantial with it. Challenging jurisdiction and not challenging jurisdiction and convoluting whether it's a jurisdiction or not and showing objectively, if we can, an opinion, notwithstanding that the ICC has handed a State Department-funded document to go after Putin, their enemy, NATO's enemy as well. Now, as we see, the truth is coming out quickly anymore with the Internet as well. That's the interesting part about all this. Even though they have Assange, there's other people out there and a lot of eyeballs looking at a lot of things and a lot of good people with brains to function, to put two and two together, to call out and identify and track down. I'm understanding now even that little boat that they found over there for the Nord Stream it's become such a stupid story that they actually put a disclaimer of almost a joke it was, so they can people forget about it. And so this is how the CIA works, the intelligence so-called agencies work. But here we have back to the challenging and accepting and jurisdictions and what it might mean. The hypocrisy of the United States, the Hague rules U.S. violated international law with Iran's sanctions. The court, and this is the court case that said, well, we will rule that way, but we now admit to a lack of jurisdiction over the property upon which the U.S. violated the laws to hold your funds. The International Court of Justice says here also ruled the court had no jurisdiction over $2 billion, as with a B, $2 billion in frozen Iranian central bank assets. Understand that the long-term war, the long-term view for the military-industrial complex to create and keep contention with Russia is the same attitude and sentiment for Iran. This is not to say I would agree with whatever they're doing. I'm saying the purpose that the United States used, the intention, is improper. This is what I was telling you. If we can give a little bit of credit to people that are looking in the capacity of it, where they do have jurisdiction, because Iran, I think, has given jurisdiction to the ICC over this matter. It ruled, and I would say so. I mean, an independent, you don't need to be a judge, I think. I was thinking about that again and again. We're getting, as we get older, we get old enough that we don't need judges, actually, if we're reasonable, if we're, I don't know how you feel, normal. Yeah, how do you figure that? The point is, you go to the objective basis, and you really don't throw yourself into your own cause. You look at it objectively, and you use what you see, and you use what you've been told. Hopefully it's good enough in the schools to give you enough linguistics to make it work. And you understand that you're not on a mission. You're looking out to be what the truth and what is equal for everybody in the application of law. You look at this, and exactly, they violated international law. I don't understand how they did it. I was embarrassed for us as a nation that they did that, like they did with Putin, like they did with any of these nations. And then they say the other side is causing trouble. They say the other one is, they complain that he's trying to wiggle away from our beating them to death. That's a crime somehow. So, the United States has shown here to not, where someone agrees, Iran says ICC over this matter has jurisdiction. That jurisdiction said the U.S. violated international law. And yet you see the ICC then determining, which is interesting to me relative to the indictment against Putin, that it doesn't have jurisdiction to do anything with the product of the theft. So they know to say it is the other side. They know to say they don't have jurisdiction. And really, what would they do? Well, these systems are closed. What are you going to really do? But now that, again, Iran proves a point, the international rules-based order is not international law. Now, I don't know where that all goes anymore, but I know the Benedict's on Admiralty told me about what that was some time ago. It's still actually operating, but it's not law. It's the agreement amongst nations who have the right to determine for themselves what will apply and what won't. That's what sovereignty is. So all this machinations I see is kind of a joke. Anyway, a lot of this. It's only what happens as long as it happens. U.S. getting progressively weaker, says Iran. And it's the truth. I can't deny it. I can't say have argument with that. Tehran must be ready to take advantage of the shift of global power, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said in a speech to officials. The shift in global power. Iran knew to go after the United States and identify it for them, put the first stone to try and cross the river of their corruption that the United States puts on them, to set the first stone to say that the United States operates out of international law, gives them the power to also admit there's a shift going on. In other words, Iran, they've shifted. As I told you, Russia did, China did. Now you see South Africa, you see all these BRICS. They're all shifted. Their mind is shifting. The global shift of global power. And it doesn't shift to one side in a multipolar world. It's divided. In minimum, it's going to be continuing to be divided in two. The very thing the CIA wants to continue by making someone the bad guy. Russia, in this case. And then now also Iran. On behalf of what? Who? The Zionists, essentially. But Iran's not speaking now. They're stepping up, and I told you this was going to happen. The nations are going to stand up and start talking for themselves. They're going to have to coagulate like another blood clot to protect themselves. So we don't know this outcome, but they're not bashful now. They're actually taking the initiative based on what? Based on what China did. Based on what China brought in and got two people, side-by-side nations having trouble, to start talking again. And that's starting to go pretty well. They're accelerating that along. That's a terror for Israel. But I wanted to point out something about this thing with China and what they've done and the shift. There was the shift. I told you the pivot to China, what it was. It wasn't military like Obama wanted to point to us. He was a criminal and a liar anyway. I don't know why anybody believed him. You also noticed very critically today, in this last week, they're mentioning that Europe is pivoting east. That puts Eurasia right in the center of power, just like they said they were going to do and why BRICS was even created. And I saw some celebrities on the Twitter, talking about how BRICS. BRICS was made to do this. It's not now. BRICS was made to do this. It's been existing. It's that other style of hybrid blood clot in the world. It's all economic, remember. But China, I want to point something out about what China did and what I said. Be careful on what you see on top and all the people getting together and what they support. All these nations are supporting. It ends up being ultimately one thing under cover of all this other strife and then the kumbaya that they create, which is fine. I'm not even criticizing that everyone's getting together. China should, it says in this article here, President Xi Jinping wants a bigger global role after Saudi-Iran deal. And he states China should, quote, actively participate in the reform and construction of the global governance system and promote, quote, global security initiatives, Xi said, the country's most powerful leader in decades. I've reported on this before. This is water under the bridge for those the listener behind the woodshed. I told you these guys, these countries, are actually pushing global governance. It was already written. The statements were already coming out. He reaffirms that after the historic Saudi intervention, if you will. Is what the United States ought to be doing diplomatically. They've failed completely when their decades-long view to vilify someone in the world to create really a monetary system in its own running through the military-industrial complex and other things supportive. The United States has lost its way. China's picked it up. I told you they would. Russia actually starts it and is actually handing the economic power to the yuan, which I find fascinating a bit. But there's a reason for all this stuff. China is a powerhouse or developing into one. They've got a lot of people and they got a lot of production capacity now that the United States gave to them. But China wants to, I don't know who gets to these people, because I'm going to get to some really quickly, just pops up. Focus in on the fact that he wants reform and construction of the global governance system, not just his country, which shows you he's in a plant as well, at least mentally, and his own Communist Party doesn't actually see it unless the communists are agreeing the global governance system will provide them a place for communism, which it does and more, way more. We have this breaking news today, if it's breaking news. World Economic Forum sets date with Communist China for summer Davos. The overarching theme of the event will be entrepreneurship, the driving force of the global economy. No local economy, global economy. The globalists are the bankers. The globalist is the money that has control of the money, that IDs and all that stuff. The global economy is at a pivotal moment of transformation. Look around you, folks. This is the truth. You might as well don't fight the guy here. The global economy is not us. It's these Klaus Schwab, you'll not have any property and you'll love it. No due process. And you proved you aren't going to defend yourself with the due process available through Kobe swindle. They're going to move now, as I said. Established business and industry models have not only been challenged by the COVID-19 pandemic, a fraud, but are now being tested by more competitive geopolitical and geoeconomic environment. Businesses and industry is under attack. How to navigate these developments and simultaneously accelerate progress. Talk about progressive? This is it. Progress. Progress moving this global systemic sustainable governance, not government. Established businesses are under threat, and how to navigate the developments, sustainable development, and the goals, and simultaneously accelerate progressive or progress on critical common goal, no individual here, from energy transition to safeguarding nature and climate. There you go, sustainable development right there. And you won't have any energy. You're energy starved. I said I opened this broadcast with that, don't I? From energy transition to safeguarding nature and climate instead of energy, notice, is the top of mind for decision makers worldwide, as the WEF is stating this in preparation of having Communist China go in and be part of this whole fraud upon the globe. The global governance condition is what the pivot to China was about. Obama helped it along beautifully. You thought it was some aircraft carriers and such. Nope, it was this stuff coming to be. Here we have back the WEF. We've been destroying, you know, the WF through Klaus Schwab. Well, look at, they just moved him aside. You haven't heard him anymore. No, they're going to bring in this world leader that wants a bigger ability to bring this on quicker. And I told you, they have the population and the technology to pull it off. That's what the Sesame Project is, and their social credit and all this other thing is about, shifting more than half of the world's population to the yuan as well. But they're at the WEF. They're being invited for this summer. If you want to watch how fast it starts to move, we see the disrespect now in the United States for it being dumb, if I can say that simple thing. It's worse than that, because if we're looking at deep state, we're looking at the national security interest is denied by the deep state itself. It's doing its own thing. In other words, corporate thing as well, if you're looking at military-industrial complex. It's using the function of government to cover itself. And we're not altering and abolishing that. The Saudi king invites Iranian president to pay official visit to Saudi Arabia. The same country, China, that pulled these people together, that wants global governance, now has the favor of Saudi Arabia and follow through, showing us deed, follow through, that will support China's bid. In other words, Saudi Arabia, who's now slapping the United States around a bit, actually protecting Russia, in what it just blockaded, just dumped. It just said, I'm going to block a bunch of oil production. Price of oil starts to go up, right? That's going to hurt us. He's showing that people that they influence, that China influences, are going to be supporting global governance, is Saudi Arabia and Iran. As they come together, kumbaya, they're all going to be underneath that system. They're all pulling it together, BRICS plus now, to be exactly what I'm telling you, watching it happen right before your eyes. The global governance system on steroids. No country will be different than this system eventually, for the United States, if we don't stop it. Every nation can stand up in their way. I'm not sure how the best answer would be. We're seeing a lot of protests in places. I've been asking, though, where does the rubber meet the road that it ends? Like in the where the farmers are up in the Netherlands or Denmark. Whatever they're protesting, a party won. They actually pulled together people in the election, and you find out that the leader of that political party that won, that made major seats, is also paid by Monsanto. It's how this thing works. And so I don't know where that's going to go. But this is the same condition now. We put, then the world starts putting, and they did this pretty interestingly to, I guess, deserve it. They put Xi Jinping on a pedestal now. That nation is now the peacemaker, and the people that they bring together has some influence that they will help and honor bring that whole thing forward, because it's bringing peace to them. U.S. ally welcomes Russian Navy frigate. We see the slap in the face. We see that the breaking down of the, if you will, the old order. There was no order. It was all chaos. We just didn't realize it. The Admiral Gorshkov has dropped anchor in Saudi Arabia's port of Jeddah for the first time in 10 years. So it's not unprecedented, but now it's happening again. Russia's part of this. They're bringing on this whole system. Won't read any more on that. It's real simple. You're watching insult. You're watching people's nations. I say people. Nations' attitudes changing. They're moving. Understand the shift. Understand that's the center. Eurasia is going to be, it looks like, going to be some of the central powerhouse against which the West will pretend to be at war, but no different than anything that they do against what is right amongst people. It will be a backsplash, a blowback, and it will be no good for us. It'll be no good for Europe as long as we keep resisting and fighting, essentially, instead of making peace and goodwill, if you please. But Russia maybe should have done that to Finland. May give them favored nation status, if you will, to keep them from going into NATO. Give them, go ahead and make agreements to make it so that they're not feeling like that they need protection. I don't know how that would work, but I think he may have made a mistake here to not advance that, at least to offer some alternative. And now Finland's on their back door. NATO's right up against what they don't want in Ukraine. And so we see, and yet we don't see Russia's not really going down the tube because of sanctions. Europe is and the United States is. Look at your life since then. So, United States, it's on record, Xi Jinping wants to bring in global governance, and the WEF is on tap already. They're going to make it so. They're moving like lightning. over this whole thing, and you're watching this shift going on. You're watching Saudi Arabia, the petrodollar, folks. It's the hub. It's being dismissed. It's being altered. It's being conditioned. The why OPEC's best offense is defense. The biggest surprise about the output cut announcement. With markets still abuzz over Sunday's OPEC Plus decision to cut oil output by over 1.6 million barrels, which was strategic, and as well tactical, tasks made easier since energy is now the second most shorted sector after banks. The CTAs are max bearish and will be forced to cover and chase oil higher from here. Below, we excerpt from two different perspectives on the OPEC decision. The first one from T.S. Lombard, that oil prices are going to settle higher. They ultimately talk about this, and J.P. Morgan steps back up to say as well in this discussion, the chief commodity strategist, Natasha Kaneva, who lays out what she thinks the most surprising part of the announcement is. When you look at how the dynamic starts to work, this was a power play that we're seeing Saudi Arabia make. It feels comfortable and confident, notwithstanding the threats, to do this in this world. I can't believe it's nothing more than an implied consent. Remember, they need the good cop, bad cop scenario. They need the world to think that there's a place to go. The United States is waiting for some scenario to just advance the military-industrial complex at your expense, my dear listener, in the United States of America. There's analysis going on this shift that I think is important. I put the tabs up so you can read them to understand some of the geopolitical dynamics that come back home to hurt us, is the point. I'm not talking about out there. I'm talking, there's a reflection. Every wave has a reflection that comes back to some extent and create an interference pattern. We're seeing the evidence of it already. OPEC plus pumping cut brings market stability and busts sanctions on Russia, we hear. I'm not quite sure how this works, but they're reporting that it does. Russia's not being hurt. Russia's part of this. Their ship just showed up at a so-called ally. Ally is alliance, isn't it? The same thing was denied to Russia, the United States State Department denied to Russia and China on their agreements. They know it's not an alliance, but we have an ally in Saudi Arabia, an alliance. But they're just, they could care less. The prince is looking forward. The king is actually inviting the diplomats to move this global governance along. The prince, who's going to be the coming crown, is actually moving into the future. He's not impressed with the United States, and he's not fearful to insult the United States, even though the United States is insulting itself, if you will. They insult the world, and so. And the reckoning is beginning, but it's going somewhere, and so don't lose that. OPEC cut the production, price started to go back up. They're actually talking maybe $100 a barrel oil here. Russia's not going to be hurt by it. Russia has made, in fact, it's in the news. Remember those ships and stuff they were doing? They've made all workarounds around the sanctions. The only people that are being hurt by the sanctions are the West, Europe, and essentially, and the United States. And that's you, not just the country, that's the people. In fact, U.S. imports from Russia are up more than 25% in February. If you thought this was supposed to be sanctioned, we're going to cut them off, this and that. No, there's another play going on. I lay these things out just to show you. We can't be utilizing the news of the day as the attack or whatever, the war, all that, and really get a glimpse of it. They are still making things available. Russia still sending product to the United States. We haven't shut it off. If it was important, we'd shut them off. But see, it's a suicide to do all this anyway. Even though they broke the chains of supply, they made the nations dependent nonetheless. And until you get your production back up, you're going to be needing these things. That's interdependence. That's just what sustainable governance is. You're seeing it still work. It's just not working at the same level in the same way. The restructuring, the transformation is going on. So it can be better managed. And essentially, the technocratic background can be done. Kissinger now steps back up. He did this a couple weeks ago. To look at this, assesses China. Remember, he's involved. This guy's been around, like, 99 years old. He's been around for all this stuff. Talk about Paul Craig Roberts and looking back and being available. This guy's been here since way back then. He's still around making talk. And you kind of got to listen to the guy. Although I think I see he's kind of weakening a little bit. Doesn't matter. He's looking at this thing. Kissinger assesses China. Always instrumental on that, wasn't he? Yeah, brokered a deal, China's brokered deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran. This is a big deal here. This guy's talking about this. This is a big deal. You watch how the dominoes start to fall against the United States. China has said, taken major steps toward its goal of becoming a participant in the shaping of the world order, former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger has said. It's a fact. That's exactly what it's there for. China's making the claim. They want to do global governance. Now, withstanding all the wars that you think is going on? There could be wars. It doesn't matter. This new order really is coming along, and it has to do with an economic order. Your servitude. A relationship change to even your life, your laws. A servitude to someone else's supposed liability. Think about that. You're completely displaced. Riyadh and Tehran agreed to restore diplomatic relations after a 7-year pause during talks in Beijing a week ago. Restate. Henry Kissinger's making comments of that. You need to see what he's saying about the balancing of all these powers and what's going on relative to, it's okay. They have things that they have to do to normalize things. It's not over yet. The United States is being put on the outs. It's just the way it's going to work. He keeps bringing up this new world order that China's going to be a part of. The guy who started this whole thing is telling you it's working. He's got no say against it. And so, just on and on and on. He does say that Israel remains increasingly concerned about Tehran's alleged nuclear weapon program and has warned of potential preemptive strikes against Iranian targets. So, while the world's moving, Israel is still there. The Zionists are still there to foment tension and keep pointing the finger like the Iran getting nuclear weapons is some sort of a threat. That the noise keeps being made about this. Israel alarmed by Iran comments from the top U.S. general. Israel was reportedly lodged protest and sought clarifications from the White House after Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley told lawmakers that the United States would never allow Iran to have fielded nuclear weapons, fearing his language indicated a shift in U.S. policy. They come back to say fielded is just a military term, no policy shift. But Israel's saying that because it doesn't want to say that it's got nuclear weapons, doesn't it? Not even United States nuclear weapons on loan. Like all their nations in Europe being a threat to Russia over there. And then what do we get? Recent breaking news. Prime Minister of Israel states that they have nuclear weapons in a sideways statement. Something that's not supposed to be done by people from Israel. You're not supposed to acknowledge or imply you've got nuclear weapons. And in a conversation about dynamics between some officials, he claims they have nuclear weapons. So, the cat is out of the bag. I don't know how they're going to cover that one up. The false attack against Iran not being able to be sovereign enough. Remember, this is not really a satisfied state, in my mind, is all, and not even the territory that's under occupation. It's still going. The people are not conquered. It's still ongoing. This is not even a full state at this point in Israel. Governed by a pseudo religious political movement that states that Iran at this point doesn't have the right to have a nuclear weapon is laughable. They don't have jurisdiction, first of all. Implying that they don't have it, Israel, they're defenseless, when we find out that they actually do. And just mind-blowing that the world doesn't jump on all that. Maybe it happened too soon. Further moving into a view from the Arab world as it starts to coalesce. Child killing, usurping Israel, facing its darkest point in history. World Assembly of Islamic Awakening. Again, the world of Islam, the religious side, is coming together and not being bashful to speak out. And I'm still kind of a bit shocked. I haven't heard much about that statement that Israel, the implied statement that Israel does, in fact, is a nuclear power relative to its reaction with other nations. Notwithstanding that, the World Assembly of Islamic Awakening has strongly condemned the killing of two military advisors of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps in an Israeli airstrike near Syrian capital Damascus, saying that the usurping Tel Aviv regime is facing the darkest point in history, reflecting the Hezbollah leader's statement that they're in some real trouble. And it's still ongoing. It really is still going. Whether it'll be really deadly to themselves inside, I don't know. The point is, it's giving pause. Like the United States attacking everybody gave everybody pause. Do I want to be on the attack mode, or do I want to start standing up for myself? And the world started to decide it's going to stand up for themselves, and they decided they were going to mutually partner up. Like I've been telling everybody in the population of the United States, it's going to be every man and woman together mutually defending each other against this U.S. domestic U.S. terrorist group called the United States government. It's out of whack. It's been out of whack. It's been out of whack all my life. Probably been out of whack out of everybody's life. If you look back to Lincoln, we'll go over that for. I want to focus on the fact the world is changing on their own. The world is becoming grown up, if I can say. They're not no longer actually so cowed by the United States power. It doesn't mean it doesn't have an influence. And you see that it does have an influence because they are kind of what I call turtling up. Again, the hard shell built up by pulling together so that they have a bit more protection. They can work amongst themselves, and they're finding that out. And they can also work amongst themselves. They can still do business with the United States and still be on the outs, if you see how this also works in the interdependence part of globalism and governance. So, where do we go? That Israel is this regime, I keep saying, they deny, but they have all the weapons to do and harm people. And even deny that, and they don't want to be regulated. No one steps on their sovereignty. Well, why does it step? Why does it need to step on Iran's sovereignty or Saudi? Anybody? United? Anybody's? Putin's? Russia's? Excuse me. They're not the chosen. They're just a Zionist movement. They have nuclear weapons in this world where we really there's no reason for nuclear weapons at the point of using them because what it'll do. They can't even use the depleted uranium without having a serious problem. It's just an insanity to consider the use of the nuclear weapons at all. Again, it's like you can't contain, if you can't contain something to your property, you're going to pollute the world, you don't have the right to do it sort of idea. And nuclear weapons just have no constraint. They're just not, I just never seen nuclear power. Fantastic stuff. Nuclear weapons? I don't know. They're just a deterrent that no one can use. Shame on the people of the world, too, all of us, that still kind of goes on. At any rate, so deny, we have a little group of people that think that they're above the law, they're above all regulation, condemning others that may or may not want to go to, Iran's on the record, it won't go to nuclear weapons, it wants to go to nuclear power. Korea's got them. Korea's got missiles. There's lots of nuclear weapon countries. And the United States is the cedar of a lot of that itself, as it complains. Enemies of Israel will pay a price. Netanyahu, the prime minister, blames Palestinian groups for a barrage of rocket attacks. It's from Lebanon now. It's starting to light up over there, folks. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's going to calm down. It seems to be relative to the Passover. I guess the Jewish people have a right to do theirs. The Muslims or Islam in their mosques don't. Again, the hypocrisy of the chosen, choosing for others what will be what they want, but not wanting to be regulated by their own will as well. Calling anybody an enemy will pay a price, but then you look, they've made an enemy of everybody. They're not bashful to tell the United States to back off. Remember, don't get your nose out of our business, right? Again, everyone's getting these nations are getting their voice, and depending on what they need, they're going to focus through. If we will strike our enemies and they will pay a price for an act of aggression, the prime minister said after 34 rockets were fired at Israel from Lebanon during a Jewish holiday of Passover. At the same time, and the reason why those were done is because Israel went into a mosque and started attacking people. I saw a video of 500 people running out under the, just a few army people that were in charge of that, beating on them as they run out at the mosque. And that, again, this stuff is starting to come to bear. And it becomes serious at the level that this may start really, again, another war, but it's now a religious war. And it's a different fervor about it. You know, we talk about ISIS and all that other stuff. No, this is going to really cause some trouble. As we now see, again, the people that are getting back together, the Arab world getting back together, does pose a real problem with Israel. And I'm a little bit surprised at what they've been doing, escalating even against Syria, as we heard. But we hear Saudi Arabia condemns Israeli settlers storming Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan. Why don't the Arabs or these Muslims have the right to do their religious rituals and beliefs? Why is Israel interfering at all? And that's starting to rattle the whole of the Arab world, the Muslim world, I suppose. And I know there's different factions. I'm not doing this accurately. I don't have to, in a way. We're watching a shift. We're watching fomenters of terror that may not be able to get away with it much longer. The GCC Secretary General condemns Israeli settlers storming Al-Aqsa Mosque. These settlers are already, that's a lie, they're already settling. They can't settle what land's already settled to the prior inhabitants, which are being wrongly stolen. The people oppressed. They're not even able to do their own religious observances. And the Arab world is starting to, or I should say maybe Muslim world here, taking notice, and they're really starting to speak out more universally. A question now, the beginning of the end of Israel. And this touches back on the statements that there are no Palestinians. The guy that Smotrich made, the minister, there is no Palestinians. Yeah, as I told you before, the Arabs, the Muslims, the Muslim people, whatever is the actual acting force here, they're not recognizing the Palestinians, and they're not going to put up with whatever Israel thinks they're doing diplomatically with the nations. Those nations are not actually going to give to Israel this insult to the Palestinians or their land. And there's only so much they can do, I suppose. When you're looking at someone who doesn't want to be regulated and don't want to admit that they have nuclear weapons that's now found out, you got to be careful about how you deal with that, don't you? And so there's a bit of pragmatism behind this, even though you have lots and lots of people and lots of nations and this little pipsqueak back there making noise. It's not necessarily going the right way. And this is an analysis that when they went down this path where they started to overtly state there's no Palestinians, they started to breach the Israeli-Jordan peace treaty. Jordan called that out. This may be Israel's own stepping down the wrong path and to an end. And the words come out again to remind us Israel was never a democratic state from 1948 to now. In fact, the word is used to cover up major sins. Again, the idea of a beneficent doesn't exist. It's the tactic of the United States. If we talk about democracy, then we're right. In fact, you talk about democracy in Ukraine, there was a coup that the United States fomented and actually accomplished that starts the problem. And Putin just came out here just recently. I don't know if I have that link. He said that was exactly what caused the problem, when the United States interfered with democracy. In other words, using the statement of democracy is just a cover to do crime, breach international law. People are not putting up with it. The leaders of the nations are not putting up with this as much anymore. And they're starting to come together to continue to protect that so they can continue to say it. It becomes a much bigger problem. As it also in the news, I think the same Milley guy, he just said, yeah, we're going to have a real problem if Russia and China are wars that we have to fight at once. Does that stop them from fomenting around Taiwan? No, no. So we got a different question coming. But Israel was never a democratic state. Now they're showing that their intention is where they're going, ultra-extreme Zionist orthodoxy, they want to call it. A political front coming underneath a religious cover. All frauds. So, Israel's sitting, I don't know what's going on, I don't know where it's going to go, but this is now fomenting all that world war we were talking about, because what they also talked about with this Saudi-Iranian thing and China being involved is now Israel has to be aware and be careful that China has an interest in those two countries now. That whatever they do against Iran will be done possibly to China and cause a problem. And so now we watch the world coming to the Middle East, which has been said by some, predicted to be where Armageddon starts. So let's be careful how this starts to degrade. Whether or not it ends up going there or not, this is a serious condition developing. From a country being supportive of the United States, saying, well, we have a military industrial complex, it's so important that we'll kill presidents over it. We'll take presidents out. We don't care about what the people say. We're above the law. We are the law. And there is no law. How's that? Multiple agreements crown historic Putin-Xi meeting. Again, showing this non-alliance, this agreement of working together. They have their differences, but their focus is between the two countries is to promote trade and multipolarity. What is that? That's global governance, because it's going to be given to China to bring the lead on. Russia's totally in with it. What I've been telling you, watch out. They may break out. They may be breaking down one aspect of the supply chain thing, but they're continuing globalism. They're all utilizing the technocratic future. They're all going by the goals and putting climate first. Remember, energy was coming in that one statement from Xi. Energy is going to be at the expense of a climate. And I say climate is another word for politics. It's political change that's going on. And then the people of the United States have a decision. Every nation has this decision. Do you want it to go there where they're taking it? Or are you going to stop with a life that you can understand? And you're going to have to fight for that, because the world is not about peace, it seems. But it's being explained in the world what's going on between China, the historic crown meeting. They have evidences of how they evidence what goes on between the two, all the greatness that's going on to bring out this multipolarity throughout. It's an economic condition as well. And what do we get to do from the United States between our engagement with China? Officials reveal the cost of shooting down the UFOs, in quotes. The military has now called off its search for remains of the three objects, but now they come up with the price, and it was about Pentagon blew more than $1.5 million to shoot down three mysterious objects spotted in the United States and Canada airspace. When you knew about it months and months ago now, this story, I've been hanging this one out. But our claim to fame with China is that we shoot down weather balloons, UFOs, whatever they were. And then we find out of the 1.5 million they admit they shot, even though if you look very carefully, one out of three missiles missed. So we lost money, $400,000, $500,000 on one missile. So we didn't get, the taxpayer did not get its money for that one. It took two more of these missiles that we went to take down balloons. And then we find out just a couple of days later, U.S. Hobby Club reports a missing balloon after UFO shot down. That's our claim to fame in the United States. Well, historic things are going on in the rest of the world now. The United States is rendered into shooting down balloon clubs, balloons, and now they wonder what they're going to do for, I guess, their little projects and doing whatever they wanted to do. It was totally legal, as we pointed out early on. It's more of the theater that goes on over and over and over. The mediocrity the United States becomes and what it does. The people, dumb people inside the government. I guess that's the mediocrity. I said this a long, long time ago. I wrote about the mediocrity would be rising up and ruling everything. We just get to pay for it all. But what are we going to pay for it? Well, we got some evidence. You're going to global governance now and led by China. Pivot to China, folks. I keep telling you about all this. It's right here now coming on us, fast and furious. I almost can't believe how fast and furious. It's a little bit quicker than I think I would have thought. Again, it didn't go 2030. It's going to be 2025, it looks like, for sure. Major, where's you going to get your cash now? Major Australia bank to end cash withdrawals. from some of its branches as the end of paper notes looms. This is your global governance order from, in Australia, that they're tuning down your ability to get cash and use the cash. And I'm telling you, when they do that, they tell you what the important thing is. You better start using that cash and demanding it. All right? They're getting, you can't get cash but through these machines now, and then only so much. We got that out of South Africa or Africa, where they were limiting the amount of cash. Remember? So it's global, this plan to limit your ability to get cash, because cash, actually, even if it's fiat, is not traceable so well. Your digital ID, your digital coins, your FedNow is. One of the Australia's biggest banks has confirmed that some of its branches will no longer allow customers to withdraw money over the counter. And they're going to end that as well. They've kind of removed that a little bit, but they're showing you that they're going to go to cashless. That is global governance. That is what the BIS says they want. Do you think they go away in the new multipolarity world? No, they're all actually empowered, these banks. These are all fraudulent organizations as well. Under what? Laws that were established by the United States after they claim because of World War II. You think the United States is out of this and we're actually losing? Well, we've talked about BRICS. No, none of that. So, what it says in this story as well, which I found interesting to highlight, that cybersecurity expert Ben Britton, who works on the chief information security officer, said that cyber attacks could stop the major banks from conducting electronic transactions linked to the EFTPO terminals. He's showing you what I've been explaining about the limit of this going to digital, and even your cash transfers, if they go through machines, any machines like this. The entire system is dependent on an internet connection to work, so if there's any interruption in the internet connection, then people will not be able to make any payment. I want you to consider that. Cash does not have that problem. They're going to take this away from you with any kind of statement that they're going to cut off, they need to cut off, or the internet's been cut off. For instance, at a major cyber attack, if there was a vulnerability within the terminal and it was exploited, then they could potentially shut down every terminal in the entire country. This could occur if hackers figured out how to exploit the banking computer code. What if it's the government itself? What if it's the power on your little phone? And here was an interesting little story that came out during the time I was going to do this here weeks ago. Again, can't get to the tabs. Charge your phone through your skin. Cool technology, but what are they applying it to? To keep your phone running so that you can think you have a life through the digital system, the coin, digital coin, your token citizenship. Breakthroughs in moisture to energy conversion are now being engineered into an energy ink cell designed for renewable energy generation with a power density that exceeds solar. They utilize the moisture in your skin in order to power something like your phone, or how about your health watch, and everything else that'll be miniaturized. So that they've got to guarantee that you're at least powering your system to keep connected to the system they're offering, notwithstanding a hacker. But it's not ends at the hacker, because the government has the switch. Report, governments are shutting down the internet more than ever. Well, if that security agent just said, if you don't have access to the internet, you can't live and make your payments and get your cash. Well, it's not cash, it's tokens now, your little QR code. If the government shuts off your internet, how do you live? And it says here, governments are shutting down the internet more than ever. And we've been hearing the governments are. They're behind the woodshed, you've been hearing the reports over and over. Okay, they're just, the notice to us to avoid that system is screaming at us, and I'm asking us to do that. Go after cash. Make it important. Make it important. And how they're... Okay, so the way that they bring it in to make it easier is that we see praised by Tony Blair, again, one of these globalists. Tony Blair praises Estonia for its digital ID system, where babies are given a digital ID at birth. Cradle to grave, folks. That's Clinton. That's the United States. You think it was just originated here? No, these are a plan that's been put into place. It's working. It's right with you go into the hospitals, you think you're getting medical care, and they're creating a token citizen in making sure that you're connected. You will be connected. You cannot avoid. You'll be an outlaw to be avoiding. The small northeastern European country of Estonia, which supports of its policies, considered Europe most tech-savvy nation, is being cited as a role model that the UK should look up to Well, introducing digital IDs, I'll stop there and move on, because that's the connection to your digital ID. They got you powered now using your own skin. Matrix is not a movie. To power the unit that keeps you in servitude is the only thing you get to do. European commissioner that wants to snoop on private messages has no idea how the technology works. And this is the morons, and I apologize to the morons that may have been insulted. These are the morons that tend to want to believe they have the technocratic power. They don't even understand the technology, its extent, what it can do and how it does it. And this is what's defining your future moving out, through someone like Tony Blair saying a whole nation putting your little ones underneath identity token citizenship is a good thing. Researchers use AI to flag misinformation in podcasts, call for tech companies, regulators to meet this challenge. What's that? That's no different than the regulator who doesn't understand the technology wanting to look at your private messages. They now have something that they can do, AI that's completely fraudulent and completely manageable and modelable, to look at what you do. And if they take away that privacy, they want to look at everything, then they can do this to everything you do. And people like myself who have podcasts, as I was telling you about the YouTube being able to transcribe the information, they just read the text that the algorithm says, whether it's accurate or not, and an AI looks at that and says, oh, that's misinformation. Based on what? The military perception management one. Based on whatever the country wants to be giving you as information at all. And pretty soon my voice goes away. We're back to Julian Assange. His voice goes away. I wonder where we would be had WikiLeaks actually been functioning very well relative to what's going on in Ukraine and anywhere in the world, anywhere. How much would have been exposed? These voices go away. My voice will go away, naturally anyway, but they're trying to block all this stuff. AI is going to be controlling it. They talked about, actually, I noticed a TI-44 can be programmed to run AI, one of the later versions of ChatGPT. Pretty cool technology, but man, do you want your own personal AI that's actually connected to the system, that's going to be controlled? It's actually dictating to your life. After it gets its influence, you start liking your robot better than you like anybody around you, which is probably easy to do. So what I think starts to happen is they want to control. They always come under, we're going to protect the children. Oh, we're going to do it for money laundering. That's the color of law, like national security reason. Why they need to do all this. It's all a lie. And until we get attacking that, and properly so, we're going to be in a little bit of trouble, at least on the back foot of this thing. But it was interesting, a story came out relative to the people actually moving into a cashless society, as I don't know, I've heard for all my life, was coming. I left this story last week. I couldn't get to it, but it comes up very important this week. Block, how inflated user metrics and frictionless fraud facilitation enabled insiders to cash out $1 billion. I don't pay much attention to some of this stuff, but it was interesting. Block Incorporated, formerly known as Square. I saw that. I recognized the name. Who do we know in Twitter that was from Square? Was none other than Jack Dorsey. He's tied up to these conversations of frictionless fraud. All right, and then they talk about in their system having a magical financial technology, and I don't know that I trusted the guy too much in the words they were using because of the global government's connection to Twitter is, and then his talking with Elon Musk. But it comes out when you read this story that a block company that you can use cashless systems, frictionless, and makes no resistance, is a neat idea. But what they're doing, they're being identified to be that uncool idea that needs to be regulated. And you're going to watch Jack Dorsey being here in a Block's Cash App platform. I just read this story a week or so before, or 2 weeks before, and I put it aside because I didn't know how to quite utilize it. But then it started making sense relative to where the government uses these agents, essentially, to bring on the control. And you read about how this situation, this Block works in the Cash App. And this story broke about frictionless fraud that they're making the comment to. Some of it looks pretty questionable. However, it's there. and you see a lot of people being involved in it. The Cash App is what underpins the block. And guess what happens this week? Cash App founder Bob Lee murdered. The tech executive previously helped lead the Google team that launched Android and served the CTO of payment company Square. Bob Lee, the creator of Cash App and former CTO of Jack Dorsey's payment company Square, was killed in a stabbing in San Francisco, California. Okay. Like taking out the president, I guess, huh? That guy connected? Now he's not. How fast? After the breaking story of how Block was being used as a frictionless fraud facilitation system. And yet, that idea is pretty cool. And this is what I'm noticing, how they take out good ideas and they make them so that, well, and then you see Dorsey's not being hit for it all either. That's the other stark thing I noticed. No, they took out the Cash App developer, it seems. Don't know why. He's dead, though. Just a week after that story broke, I think a week and a half, 2 weeks after that story broke. Very interesting to me as we move cashless and control. Always this thing that's moving in to move us into the next iteration of a more servitude, the token citizen, as I coined it, if you will, on one of the broadcasts here. EU merchants brace for cashless future. This is not a joke about where this is going. Every action is being taken by the controllers to control. Impending regulations could force the acceptance of digital euro. Force the acceptance, just as I've been explaining they would do. And the decentralized becomes criminalized. They impose their own, and you're forced to use it. You're going to be forced to use the digital token instead of the cash. They will place the term legal tender on a digital token. It can't be refused, even though right now your cash that says the same thing is without remedy denied. I don't know if I told you about how this little trick is. They won't enforce it for the cash, and they're going to enforce it for the digital currency. And we see that coming up. Binance concealed ties to China for years. They now bring down the fact that China's involved with the digital currency of Binance. That guy went to the Congress. They're going to destroy all these exchanges. Relative to the centralized control and making it unattractive, if you will, for most people to engage digital currencies outside of what is legal tender. A reminder now at the very last thing here from Solari Report, an older story, make cash great again, use cash every day. And instead of making it on Friday like she had, make cash every day. Your life is going to depend on it. You're going to need the independent action, the parallel course, and cash is still legal tender. And they really, you'll notice in the stories, they can't get rid of it if it's being used. Don't let it be unused. Don't let it do what Australia is trying to force it into. You really got to get noisy about that part. It really literally means your freedom, the way that you work with your surroundings. And that you can, remember, they don't want you to pay something. You're not going to. You can't go, and you likely won't be able to have the facility to go to a garage sale or something like that they don't want you to do business with. So, I hope something I said today gives your mind a reeling and to maybe figure out where you're going to have to be standing. You don't want to be standing on the train tracks. As even Solari Report used that reference. We're standing right in the middle of the train tracks. How about if we get off it and get about 20 miles away in case we get toxic destruction made by the government itself? I hope something I said will give you that perspective, put you there, let you do a parallel path, protect yourself in the future. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or nature willing.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
a can of whoop-ass to you, Zach.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.